I wrote you a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks, asking if I could talk to you about your bonus baby days.
Yes.
Is this a good time?
Yeah, I'll be all right.
Okay. I really appreciate this, by the way. It's real hard getting in touch with some of you guys that haven't been around for a while.
Yeah.
In the letter, I don't know if you recall, I'm going to try to write a book on the bonus baby era,
yeah.
Which may end up being a pretty good-sized challenge since I'm not getting a lot of response from the players. But I'll ask you, you know, I don't know, 8 or 10 questions, whatever, and if you just please answer as short or as long as you want to.
Yeah, okay.
Your bonus amount, I have seen reported as $25,000 and as $50,000. Is either one of them right?
Well, you know, I think what it was, I got, I think a $32,000 bonus and then a guaranteed $6,000 for 3 years, which was a major league minimum.
Okay.
Which was 18 plus 32, brought the total package to 50.
Okay, so, that's actually, you were stuck there for 2 years regardless, so you got an extra year's.
Right, extra year. Whenever they sent me down, I was guaranteed to make the major league minimum for the third year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who scouted you for the Orioles? Do you remember?
Trying to remember that gentleman's name. He looked like Mr. Magoo. Never will forget how he looked. And if I had time to think a while, I might come. His name might flash back, but and I should remember him because he was such a nice old fella. But I can see him just as plain as day.
It's been a while.
And I swear I cannot remember that fellow's name.
Maybe it'll come to you. How many teams were after you altogether?
Oh, there was I can't recall how many. Detroit, the night after I graduated from high school, flew me up there to work me out a couple of days. And the most I was offered, Baltimore, for some reason, felt like I had been offered a bonus by Detroit, but the only thing they offered me was the minimum that they could pay me without getting into a bonus situation in a AAA contract, from what I remember. And then the Phillies, there was a scout with them, I do remember his name, by the name of Hap Morris, that they were willing to meet anything or do better than anything that I was offered to sign, whether it be a bonus or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But at that time, I thought I was a third baseman. That's what I was signed in. Puddinhead Jones was going great guns with the A's in Philadelphia and the Phillies. And Baltimore was, you know, looked like they were trying to get a bunch of young guys signed to try to build. And I just felt like I was better off getting into that organization than signing with the Phillies at that time. But I feel like the Phillies would have probably given me more than what Baltimore gave me if I would have just told them what I was being offered. You know?
Well, it was hard. Jones was still a pretty young man then. He was, what, maybe 27 or so?
20s, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see where the decision could be tough. You were signed out of high school?
Yeah.
Where did you go to high school?
A place in Monroe, Louisiana called Neville High School.
N-E-V-E-L-L-E?
N-E-V-I-L-L-E.
Okay. Any chance they would have your high school record?
No, because there really wasn't that much baseball at that school, and most of the schools then was not, records were not kept that well. You know, they had a school book and that was it. And football was a big thing, and there was four of us that signed out of that school. There were three boys ahead of me that were seniors when I was a junior. And they ended up going to college on scholarships. In fact, two of them went to Alabama. That's where I was going if I hadn't signed. And one of them went to LSU, but they all ended up signing pro contracts after a couple of years in college. And one of them made it to the big leagues. The other two played double-A ball, I think, maybe something like that.
But, who was the one who made it?
But they wouldn't have anything over there at the high school.
It's real hard getting any records at all.
Yeah.
Who was the boy who made it to the majors?
pitcher by the name of Art Swanson signed with Pittsburgh. He went to LSU a couple of years and went ahead and signed.
Yeah, I remember him.
He also signed a bonus contract.
Right, I've got a letter out to him waiting for a reply.
Yeah, I saw him about a year ago at his dad's funeral, but and I can't remember whether he's living in Houston or Michigan or where he was.
I found his address. Some of the addresses are even hard to find.
Yeah.
I can. What did you play? Summer ball then, American Legion?
I played American Legion ball, started when I was 13 and at a real early age, really, but between my junior year and senior year in high school, at that time, if you were going to be 18 during that year, I think the way the rules stated, between my junior and senior year in high school, I actually played semi-pro ball in a semi-pro league here with college guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then some old timers around up here that had been in the league for a lot of years, but there was Jim Davenport, who you might remember.
Sure.
He played shortstop for us. And there was, I don't know, about four or five other college. Mississippi State had some guys over here in Ole Miss. And, so I was really in a pretty fast semi-pro league between my junior and senior year in high school.
I remember those leagues. There were some pretty good ball players.
Yeah, there was a league down here called the Big 8 League. And, man, then, you know, you just didn't have TV and air conditioning. People getting out of the house at night, they go to the ballpark.
Yeah, that's what it ought to be anyhow.
Nice crowd, you know. So,
Davenport was your shortstop, and you were the third baseman, and you guys turned it around when you got to the majors.
Yeah, he ended up, I ended up playing as much short, second, or third. You probably look at my record, I didn't have that many games separating the number of games that I played at each position.
I had your whole record right here, and I put it away a little bottle.
Davenport might have been playing a lot of second base for us. We had an older fella that lived up there in that area playing shortstop, I think, a lot of times. Davenport played second, I think.
Well, you went to college in the off season.
Yeah.
You used your bonus money?
Yeah, well, that and I worked. I worked at a job a half a day, and I'd go to school a half day. My dad managed a warehouse there in Monroe, and I'd have morning classes and then get there about 1 o'clock, and I'd work 4 hours a day there at the warehouse, and then went and studied at night. And but it took me 9 years to get through there.
What'd you get through with?
Northeast Louisiana there in Monroe.
Now, what kind of degree do you have?
I got an accounting degree.
Is that what you're doing? You're using it today?
I'm a plant manager. Really have not used that degree. It helped me get a job there, but back in 74 when I started, but kind of got into the manufacturing part of it, and I've been plant manager there since 84.
Enjoy it?
Yeah, well, yes and no. It's been good to me, but it's, you know, it's one of these jobs where you go on vacation, you leave your number, and you call back and make sure everything's okay, and it's kind of, you know, it's a 24-hour operation, 7 days a week, and it's pretty demanding.
Yeah, those can get to you after a while, and I know the feeling. Do you know whose roster spot you took when you joined Baltimore?
Yeah. Kennedy.
Bob Kennedy?
Bob Kennedy.
Okay.
I'm almost sure that's who they released or sold him or something whenever they put me on the roster.
Well, he's not exactly a big name, but he's the biggest name of anybody who did. A lot of the fellows don't know whose place they took, but of those that I've talked to that did, most of it were guys who were, well, I guess Kennedy was probably close to the end of the line at that point anyhow.
Just about, that was just about the end for him.
But he'd been around a while and had been a regular. Most of them were always hangers-on. You got a lot of playing time, a lot more than most of the boys just out of high school. But the Orioles, 20% of their roster were bonus babies when you were there.
Yeah.
And I guess you got more playing time than any of them. Don't take this wrong, but from the looks in the book, it was because of your glove and not because of your bat. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I trying to think of, you know, they had a lot of guys there, and Richards, you know, he wanted to give me an opportunity there to kind of get my feet wet, and no doubt about it, I was over my head, but I don't know whether, you know, Swango, he never could find home plate with a pitch.
That's someone that, did he actually join the Orioles?
Yeah.
Because he never played.
He was there when I got there. I think he had just signed, I believe, about before I got there, I think.
Okay, and he never played, he never appeared in a game,
No. And
he was gone before that season was over.
Yeah, he just, I don't know whether they released him and the Yankees signed him, tried to make an outfield ride of him or what, but I'm not sure they even kept him there the full 2 years. I don't recall.
He bounced around a couple of systems. I don't know if it was the Yankees, but somebody else, and then somebody after that.
Yeah, I know the Yankees tried to make an outfield ride of him.
Every time he appeared in front of more than two people, he went to pieces.
Yeah, he just never could find home plate. You know, bat practice, had a heck of an arm.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Gastall got killed.
Right. Plane crash, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, Nelson, he looked like, from what I remember, he probably had as many more tools than anybody. You know, big old strong boy, had a good swing.
Uh-huh.
But just never did put it together. He played a little bit there before they, you know, his 2 years was up, but just never did make it back up.
I don't think he ever hit a home run in the majors with this, all the power he was supposed to have.
I don't recall. I remember my first one, though.
Who was that on?
Bob Turley.
Oh, that's a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive. Made you feel good, I bet.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen your statistics compared to that of the other bonus babies?
No, I never have. Have never really looked at any of them to compare them. No.
You're very high. You have you've got the fifth most games played of all the bonus babies,
uh-huh.
The fourth most at-bats, the fifth most runs, the fourth most hits, fourth in doubles, third in triples, eighth in home runs, fifth in RBIs, eighth in stolen bases, fourth in walks.
Now that's over a career? Or?
That's over a career of all the bonus babies who signed.
Oh, okay.
Not just the first year.
Okay.
You'd be higher off the first year because you played more than a whole lot of them.
Yeah.
Sixth in batting average. You weren't Carolina Killebrew, but you were one of the most successful of the bonus babies.
I never even thought about it. Never had really considered, you know, compared it the way that you're looking at there.
Yeah, when you put it on a list, I guess, of everybody who played in the last 50 years, you're not quite up there, but you had a good career. Jim Clyburn.
Yeah.
He was there. Roger Marquise, was he a bonus baby?
Who?
Roger Marquise.
No.
Marquis.
I don't even remember him.
Right? He had one at-bat at the age of 18 in 1955.
No.
And I can't find anything more about him anywhere.
No, he wasn't a bonus player.
Okay.
No. No.
And Odell was in the service, I guess, when you signed, wasn't he, Bill?
Odell, yeah, he was in the service when I joined him, but he came out sometimes after that. I can remember him maybe coming in and pitching on leave or something there 1 year.
I think in 56 maybe he came out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, before he went to the Giants in what, 57 or 58?
Yeah.
Do you know by any chance where Bruce Swango is? I've tried to find an address.
What was that little town he was from? Welch, Oklahoma?
I know it's Oklahoma, is all I remember.
Yeah, he was from Welch, Oklahoma, and you know, I went out there I took my son to a baseball camp in Missouri back in about 74, 75, 74, and there was a guy at that camp who had a son there and was from Oklahoma, and he was on the Legion team, was going to pitch a ball game over in Oklahoma one night, and asked me did I want to go drive over there to the game with him. I said, yeah, I'll go with you. And we drove over there, and I was John Brown. I didn't run up on Bruce Swango out there.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe it was at Welch.
Yeah, I will look that up and see if I can. Welch can't be a big town.
Around there, working at a plant or something around there.
I remember reading stories about him when I was a kid. I'm about too much younger than you, probably 5 or 6 years. And I remember that if Swango had been one half as good as all the articles said he was, the Hall of Fame should open the doors right then. It was.
I tell you, I can remember, from what I remember, I understand why they signed him, because he had, of course, he didn't have the pitcher's body. He was strongly built, you know, 5'11" probably. Very, you know, an old country farm boy, I guess, from out there, but extremely strong and stocky, but not what you would call the pitcher's body, ideal pitcher's body, but he had a heck of an arm.
Uh-huh.
You remember, he threw the ball, you know, I used to have to sacrifice my body a lot hitting off of him.
I remember they compared his speed with that of Feller, but I don't guess they could time him back in those days.
Yeah.
When you joined the team, what was your reception from your teammates, your veteran teammates?
I'll tell you what, I flew up there into Detroit, and I caught a cab from the airport right to the ballpark. And then I ran in at the baggage claim. I ran into one of their coaches by the name of Al Vincent, who had been out doing something, scouting maybe, and he was going to the ballpark. So I rode in the cab with him, you know, carried my luggage and everything. And of course, I was scared to death, you know, being 18 years old and didn't know anybody. But I can remember they were really nice to me. I don't remember anybody, you know, giving me a hard time. Oh, you know, you can expect to get some harassment, but they treated me fine. Hoot Evers was my first roommate. They couldn't have put me with a nicer guy.
Yeah, he just passed away. I understand he was a fine gentleman.
Yeah, he was. And in fact, that night, the second night there, we caught a train from Detroit to Chicago. We got in about 7 o'clock in the morning, and of course everybody went, got cabs to the hotel and ate breakfast. Well, I didn't, you know, I went around the corner and found me a breakfast for 50 cents. And when I got back up to the room, there was a do not disturb sign on the door, and I didn't go in there. I went down to the lobby, and I stayed down there sitting in the lobby till about 2 o'clock. He came down, and he said, "Where in the world have you been?" I said, "Well, I came in." He came up to the room, there was a do not disturb sign. I said, "I wasn't going in there." He said, "That was for the maid, for me to go in and rest, sleep, you know, till we wanted to get up this afternoon." I said, "Well, I wasn't coming in there." But he was a real nice fella.
That's a good story. Jim Small told me, asked about the adjustment. He said that when he was home in high school, he couldn't stay out after 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And then he signed with the Tigers, and 3 days later, he was tipping porters to carry his bags in New York. He said the adjustment was overwhelming to him. It took a long time to make and never thought he made properly. Would you have any problems with it?
Well, I can remember, you know, it was definitely a learning experience for me, because I had never been in the places where I was going. The only thing I'd ever done, really caught a train to Sumter, South Carolina, to a Legion tournament one time. And it was a different, but I, you know, there were some guys coming in there like Swango and Nelson and Tyburn. He was an old country boy from over in Alabama. You know, he was out of college, but they were, you know, we just kind of, me and Tyburn and Swango had a room in a house there right out by the ballpark in Baltimore and Nelson. And there was a family or two up there that really just kind of took us under our wing. There was one family there in Baltimore by the name of the Hermans that had some relatives. The fellow's wife, he was a lawyer, and she was from Monroe.
Oh.
And they just kind of took me under their wing, and of course Bruce and I was together an awful lot, and you know, they helped us an awful lot, and there was a lot of things that I had to learn to do, that like he said, all the tipping and so forth, and but I don't know, you just kind of grow up fast in those kind of situations, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, I've got a 19-year-old son right now. He's a pitcher, pitches college ball. He would give his left ear to be a professional ball player. I can't possibly imagine him put in a situation like you must have been put in.
Yeah.
Now, you know, maybe your father couldn't imagine that of you either,
but... No, But it was something that I had, man, my eyes were wide open, bug-eyed of what I was going through as far as being up there traveling with those guys and getting into some games. It was quite an experience. But I don't know. I guess I was pretty mature for an 18-year-old. I think I was. Looking back, I got married. Went to South America and played winter ball, and I came home, made up my mind I wasn't going to spring training that year. That would be my first spring training without my girlfriend. So I came home from winter ball. We set a wedding date in February and got married. Had been spring training 10 days later. So, we kind of grew up fast. And
that helps you grow up, too.
Yeah. But, I don't know. She said she wouldn't go back through it again, she doesn't think. Because she used to make some trips across the country with our kids, by herself driving.
Oh, that's got to be tough.
There's no way you'd let your wife do that.
You still hear about them doing it, but I guess they make it enough now to where they can have at least packs worn and they can fly.
Yeah, they're making some money now. I mean, if they're taking care of it right, they should never have any problems.
I bet a lot of them will, but you're right. I don't see how they could possibly. I talked to one fellow here a while back, just an interview, not a bonus, maybe. Carl Scheib, you remember him?
Yeah. Carl was, he was in San Antonio when I was down there.
Yeah, he's still there.
Is he?
Awfully nice fella.
Yeah.
He said he'd play today for no money just to qualify for the pension plan.
Yeah.
And I think I would too.
How did he make the pension?
Yeah, he made the pension. He first started in the majors at 16.
He was young, yeah.
I guess he left the majors before he was 30.
Yeah.
But still, he was, he probably had 11, 12 years in. So he's he's on the plan.
Yeah.
Not like it's on today, but he's on it. One of the complaints a lot of the bonus baby pitchers have made, the ones I've talked to, was that the coaching was of two kinds, very poor and just plain horrible. The pitching coaches generally were somebody's friend and many times weren't even former pitchers. What was the coaching like for you as an infielder?
Well, Baltimore, they were into this youngster program, and I just kind of lived on every word and everything that they told me as far as how I should do and what I should do, and I felt like that Al Benson and Harry Bikin and Moomin Harris knew what they were talking about, and Richards, of course, and I felt like that I was well coached, and I have no idea what kind of coaching. I know it's changed a lot as far as what they think these guys ought to be doing. Heck, they've got them in weight rooms and everything else now,
Mm-hmm.
When we came through there, no lift a weight. You're going to get yourself all tied up. And I never touched a weight. But at home, they would have us come out to the ballpark in the morning at 10 o'clock for special instructions and hitting and fielding and they were trying to force feed us, and I felt like they were good teachers, and I didn't have any. I can't recall ever thinking that I wasn't getting the proper instructions that I needed. I remember they sent me to San Antonio. George Stoller was my manager down, and heck, I was probably 0-for-40. He could have called up there and told him to send me on down to B-ball, and I was over my head in that Double-A league. That Texas league was a good league then.
Sure was.
And then all of a sudden, he stayed with me, and I started hitting a little bit and ended up hitting about 247 after a horrendous start down there. And he could have told them to send me on down the line. No, it wasn't George Stoller. It was old he went out and managed Seattle when they first year they expanded out there.
Schultz?
Joe Schultz.
Yeah.
Joe Schultz. And but he stayed with me, But of course, in the minor leagues, all they had was a manager then, and there wasn't that much instruction. You know, you had a pitcher that was a first base coach and a third base coach and that kind of thing, and the manager kind of did it all, what I remember. I can't remember anybody else being, when I got to Vancouver, Charlie Metro and Spider Jorgensen was there as a coach, but he's kind of a player coach. And I can't recall even having a pitching coach in the minor leagues out there. But I don't have any problems with the way they tried to handle me. And heck, the main thing was to play.
Yeah.
You know, and the more you played, the more you learned, the more confidence you got. And that's where you really advanced or matured was just having a chance to play every day.
You can't learn anything by just sitting on your rear end.
That's right. They can tell you all and show you this and show you that, but until you go out and play every day and get, you know, because I had a lot of things. I thought I was Baby Ruth when I signed out of high school, and it took me almost a full, from June to September to kind of find out how I was going to have to hit down in the Texas League, which is when I got out and started playing every day and hit the ball all around. And, but I don't have any problems the way Baltimore handled me, and they gave me a chance, and I've always appreciated that.
Can I just interrupt a second? I've got a call on the other line.
Okay.
Just a second.
Right.
Hello?
On the other phone?
They went, well, it's on this call waiting things, and sometimes they don't wait,
yeah.
Which is all right. Nobody needs me this time of night, I hope. You're the first Oriole I've spoken with, and I suspected that I was going to probably get a good report. Paul Richards loved young players, and I was sure that he would not do right by them. But the other teams, the fellas, I've talked to mostly pitchers, but nobody has said anything good about the coaching, although they haven't necessarily said bad things about it until talking to you. And I really kind of suspected that would be the case. What did you think of Paul Richards?
I was with him at a very young age, and I felt like the man was God when I played for him. And the other players, from what I remember, respected him, and he was supposed to have been a tremendous handler of pitchers. And of course, he had that slip pitch that he was trying to teach back in those days. And after looking back at what we had, the nucleus that we had, and look at those old rosters sometimes. I'm sure he did an excellent job with it, of what he had to work with there, they put together. But, I ended up my career with him in Atlanta. He was in Atlanta, and I was with California in 68, and he bought my contract. And I ended up starting out with him, and I ended up finishing my career with him in Atlanta. And at the end of 68, whenever I announced my retirement to start become ticket director for the Royals, he called Talis up, told him that, he felt like they should get a ball player for me, that I was still on the roster, and that they had, talked me into retirement. But I'd already made up my mind. That gave me 10 years in the big leagues, and the kids were in school, and I had had enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted a ball player from the Royals. Because they had hired me as a ticket director, but of course Talis didn't end up doing anything. But I was 18 years old. I was scared of the man. I guarantee you, when he said something, I jumped. I remember I missed a pop fly in New York one night at Baltimore. It was foggy kind of, and the pop up went up. Heck, I called it, and I missed that ball 10 feet. And he called me in the office after the game. He said, "Son, let me tell you something." He said, "If you call that ball, you better catch it. I might have to take some of that money back away from you." but I should have let Miranda have it for sure, but I just took charge of it. I, I never saw the thing until it was about 15 feet above the ground coming down. It was too, I wasn't even under the boat.
What were you planning? Were you second or third?
I was playing third then, and Willie was playing short.
If you're wondering, you played 406 games at short, 307 at second, and 268 at third. So mostly at short, but it was pretty well divided.
I really got a break there when Hauser, probably, let's see, 60, about 63, Hauser tore a rib cage cartilage about the first week of the season. He wasn't hitting, went out for some extra hitting in that cold weather. Tore a cartilage, and heck, I got in there. They put me at short, and I was hitting so good. Whenever he got where he could come could play, they couldn't afford to take me out of lineup. Charles was going great guns at third, so they traded Hauser to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had about 3 years there playing shortstop that. Really were my best years.
Well, you had 3 years, 2 years, anyhow. But there were other shortstops in the league, maybe a couple of them.